ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's the assistant to the regional manager, Joe George, behind the glass. It is a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Blankers, you know what everybody says about us? They say that we're gentlemen. They say that we're scholars. They say that we are, you know...
Even Joe?
The salt of the earth. They all say that about us. And we gave the opportunity to our very own Joe George, who we love, who we adore, who we always talk about in such glowing terms,
yes,
who we hold in very high regard. Same thing with Andrew Carlson. I call him beautiful all the time.
You do.
I call him gorgeous. You say that I shouldn't be so shallow, that I should look beyond,
that's right,
beyond his gorgeous face and look into his brain and in his heart. And, you know, we gave them the opportunity yesterday to promote the bullpen, which is a great idea. The bullpen's a great idea. Every sports radio station should have local programming on in some form or fashion on Saturday and or Sunday. We do that here at ESPN 97.5. Do you know how they spent 50% of that last segment promoting the bullpen?
Bashing us.
Bashing the Bees.
Capital T, capital E, capital A, capital M.
Here's the thing.
What was that?
Once it was Bill O'Brien spelling
Bill
team.
O'Brien.
What was he spelling?
Team.
Oh, okay.
Once again, we are on the same page because not having spoken to each other prior to the start of the show.
Unbelievable.
I'm thinking the same thing. I'm sitting there driving home, shaking my head, going, should I text now or should I just hold off till the show tomorrow? The fact that we give this guy a golden opportunity. We literally, before our show started, got the idea presented to us, so that's a phenomenal idea, and it's fantastic, and it works, and we should do that, only, much to my chagrin, to get into the car to find out that in doing so, it was positioned in such a way that it looked like we were slacking, and they were the heroic guys coming in to fill in.
What goes around comes around.
Fair. That's fair.
Comes a long way around. If it's coming around, never mind.
That's a fair point. Anyways, yeah, AC, beautiful Andrew, who I'll always be shallow with Andrew from here on out, and Joe George, who might be on a little bit less regard going forward, using 50% of their 13 minutes to bash the Bees after we were gentlemen and scholars.
It was much less than that, I promise you.
Yeah, it was about 50%.
No, it
was
about like that driving home.
It was like 20%.
Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. No, I actually, you know, of the two of you, the one that continued to dig deep in his pocket to bring it back out was you.
Well, yeah. What goes
without
around
question
comes around. Yes.
Joe is getting it. Joe is getting it.
How do you feel about doing major market radio with a fatty in your front lip?
If you can't take it, don't dish it.
Oh, no. Oh, I can take it.
Apparently,
I just understand. Just remember who has the mics more often. We'll come back and get you. Don't you worry.
It'll happen today.
Believe me, based on what happened yesterday, it better happen today.
All right. Anyways, our Astros opening day countdown. You know, we're only 15 shows away. Only 15 shows away until Astros opening day, until they're ready to reign, until they're looking for back-to-back championships and their third World Series title in 7 years. I cannot wait.
Did you watch a little baseball last night?
Venezuela Astros?
Yeah.
I watched bits of it. Here's a hot take right out of the gates. If you're anti pitch clock in baseball, you should have to watch the Astros and Venezuela play last night for 24 hours straight and tell me that you don't want pitch clock.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so awkward, but it was so fun to have baseball back on TV. I was so jacked just to be able to sit and watch some baseball. But I'm like you. I was bouncing around. And then even the last inning was so odd that one of the Astros pitchers was pitching for Venezuela.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay.
3 hours, 45 minutes.
Yeah,
3:45.
I'm already done with spring training, except for the fact that we have a couple guys that I'd like to see participate. But other than that, spring training games are tough as it is, but you're right. I mean, they're the ones that really need the pitch clock and all the different – and the hitter's clock and all that. Yeah, you're right. That was I saw McTaggart tweeting about it too, going, oh, how I miss the pitch clock because, man, that was very elongated.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's watch that. If you're anti-pitch clock, you have to watch that for 24 hours straight. Anyways, we're 15 shows away until opening day. We've been asking you an Astros opening day countdown question each and every day. Look, today's question, how do we feel about the early returns on Dana Brown going into the season? It's far too early to start writing the book on Dana Brown. He's only been here for a few months. General manager's job really is looking at a big picture versus small picture. But of the early returns we've seen on Dana Brown, not much to work with, but the early returns of Dana Brown, how we feel it? 713-780-3776. What's been your early, far too soon, small sample size reaction to the new Astros GM, Blankers?
You know, I like him. I think it's I believe in his resume. I think it's refreshing how open he is, but I think it might bite him in the butt in terms of how overly giving he is with the media. And I don't know if he's learned to play the game to the point where sometimes he's going to say a lot but not say anything. But basically, he puts a lot out there, and he's the exact polar opposite in that regard from James Click. But I do like the fact that, you know, he's focused on, you know, wrapping up the talent that we already have, that he's looking at, you know, the young talent in the system and how they might be able to help. I think that there's more of a synergy already, you can tell, between him and Crane and Bagwell and the powers that be, to where I'm still very optimistic and I believe he's the right guy for the job. I just my big concern is he too open with the media when he decides to talk?
I think that's probably the biggest criticism of Dana Brown so far is that he will talk quite a bit. He shows his hand. We've heard it with the contract extensions, the latest news with Kyle Tucker and Framber Valdez, how he's addressing their contract situations, has talked about them openly. We'll get to some of the quotes here in a little bit. I guess the question that I would have, though, is like, what is he surrendering? What is he losing? Because a lot of times when you show your hand, that becomes a detriment. Like, now you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. I, for one, don't see the disadvantage that the Astros are losing because he has been open. What is it, do you think?
Wait, ask that again?
Because, look, I think whenever you tip your hand,
yeah,
that you're now putting yourself at a disadvantage.
Well,
I don't see Dana Brown putting his team at a disadvantage.
I think it's a potential disadvantage. And that's why I wanted to get it straight, because I want to get the right direction you were going with this. I think from my perspective, and you and I talked about this when it happened, it's not a definitive that he puts himself at a disadvantage, but he has the potential to put himself in a tough spot because he's committing verbally, and it's all in the presentation too, but you commit verbally when you basically are saying, I want Altuve and Bregman to finish their careers as Astros. Now, we've talked about this. If it's the player's choice, you guys have had conversations, and they're going to talk to their agent, if it's Scott Boras, and say, take your foot off the gas on this one. Let me kind of call the shots because this is where I want to be regardless of what other teams are offering. That's one thing. But if you have an overzealous Scott Boras-type agent and he hears those things, he's going to use that and put that in his back pocket and have ammunition when you're sitting down to discuss a contract. And so it's not that he's backed himself into a corner he can't get out of, but that has the potential to backfire depending on the other variables in a situation.
Maybe I'm naive, but I believe the number is the number. Like, let's just use nice round numbers for the sake of nice round numbers. Let's say Kyle Tucker wants $30 million a year for 10 years. He wants $300 million over the 10 years of a contract. I don't think that anything Dana Brown's going to say is going to influence Kyle Tucker's demand. So Dana Brown can be loose lips, sink ships, blah, 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 blah. As long as he gets to that number, Kyle Tucker is going to sign. I don't think that Boras would hold Dana Brown over the barrel because he's talking about how he wants to sign players. In fact, he's even talked yesterday to Chandler Rome about how he's not comfortable going beyond X amount of years, how he's not comfortable signing a player to their X birthday. So, like, he is very transparent. He's very open. I ultimately don't think Kyle Tucker is going to re-sign. I don't think Dana Brown is going to give him the 10 years that he wants. I just, quite frankly, don't believe that's going to happen. I'll be pleasantly surprised if it does. So, depending on the contract. I'd have to wait to see what the contract is. I just, like, I understand what you're saying. Like, I hear you to where, like, the agents are going to hear Dana Brown being open to the media, mm-hmm. Open with his comments and his quotes. I just don't think it affects the bottom line.
It can. I think that, what was the guy, the former Miami executive that the Wheelhouse had on? He had, right after you and I had the conversation.
David Sampson
came back and he referenced, from our, and I'm not saying he was listening to our conversation, but he referenced specifically when you get, you know, one of those hard-ass agents that you've really left yourself open to a lot of potential things that can be detrimental to the team because of the fact that the agent's going to use that. So, but, you know, we also, you and I broke it down to the extent of saying, look, it's two different situations, and every situation's different. Bregman's a guy that's probably still looking for a big payday that's going to follow the money and probably not be as loyal as a guy like Altuve who said, you know, I came up with this organization. They gave me a chance. I love it here. I want to finish my career here. And he's a guy that can overrule a Boris and come in and say, it's not about all that money anymore. It's about me being comfortable with my family, and this is what I want to do. And then it's not a factor. But I think that in a lot of cases it can be, because at the end of the day, now the agent's going to push that you don't want to look bad. You don't want to go have to go back on your work, you know, what you said. And whether they believe it or not, whether that bothers them or not, that's a different story.
I just don't think Dana Brown is going to feel like I don't think he's going to get pressured or strong-armed into doing a contract that he's uncomfortable with. Now, that might take some backfire from, like, the fans. That might be something that knocks down the Dana Brown approval rating, quite frankly. I just don't think that Dana Brown's going to be strong-armed by a single agent to demand a contract that Dana Brown feels uncomfortable with. So, like, I appreciate the transparency. Do I think the transparency is going to cost him in terms of contracts? I quite frankly don't, because I don't think that Dana Brown's going to sign that contract. Now, I think that the negative, if I'm forced to pick a negative on how this could backfire with Dana Brown, I think a little bit could be affected for his approval rating, where he's talking a big game of sign Kyle Tucker. He wants to sign Framber Valdez, and then all of a sudden he doesn't sign Kyle Tucker, and in 3 years he leaves as a free agent. He's talked a big game about signing Framber Valdez. He doesn't sign Framber, and in 3 years he becomes a free agent. I could see the Astros fan base kind of moving the approval rating of Dana Brown, but quite frankly, I'm not one to sign those dudes to big contracts anyway, so it wouldn't affect my approval rating of Dana Brown. I don't think it'll cost the Astros dollars. I think it could impact the approval rating of the new Astros GM.
Yeah, it could. Overall, though, I think it's refreshing. I like his approach. He seems to be the right guy for the job. I think they got it right. I think he's the right kind of mix. And I think the other thing, Jeremy, that really helps in the situation we were just talking about is you got an owner that doesn't care. You got an owner that doesn't care if, you know, if it rubs people the wrong way or that certain people don't like it or if agents think that they have the upper hand. At the end of the day, Crane has proved if he wants something, he's going to go get it. And if he doesn't believe in it, like long-term deals at major amounts of money, it doesn't matter what everybody else says. He's pretty good about, he's been in business world and in negotiations for a long time. He's pretty good about sticking to his guns and saying, nope, not doing that. And sorry, we'll just have to agree to disagree.
Yeah, they've the proof's in the pudding with that, right? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. DJ Bienemy is going to join us at 1:30, covers the Texans for ESPN. Looking forward to that conversation. And our Bad Take Boulevard bracket continues. It is Thursday, after all, a little bit later on in the program at 2 o'clock. But Astros opening day countdown, just 15 shows away. How do we feel about the early returns on Dana Brown, the new general manager? 713-780-3776. I'll be honest, guys. I think I'm falling in love. I think I'm falling in love with Dana Brown. I'll tell you why next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, we know it's March Madness time. Conference tournaments are on all over the place right now, and that means March Madness and the actual big tournament is right around the corner. And the only place that you want to put money down and get involved with wagering on the college games is right there at mybookie.ag, because at mybookie.ag, they take care of you in a variety of ways, making sure your money is safe, paying out when you win. More important than anything else right now, if you go to buymookie.ag and use the promo code BET975, you get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. They're going to match 50% of it on that next deposit. So if you put $1,000 in, you're going to get $500 extra in your account. And on top of that, you're going to get a free entry into the $150,000 MyBookie Madness Bracket Contest for a chance at big money there as well. If you're the type of guy who likes to fill out multiple brackets to get an advantage, you can do that too. Price of entry is less than an Uber ride, all for a shot at life-changing amounts of money. With so many online betting sites to choose from, you got to have a platform that makes it simple to bet and to win, like MyBookie. And on top of that, they always take care of their customers. And this is just another example, as they give you other ways to get more money in your account and more chances to win. Choose mybookie.ag, promo code bet975 for the ultimate sports betting experience, whether it's college basketball or golf or soccer or whatever sport you're interested in betting on. You can probably do it at MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag, promo code bet975.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, what are your early returns on Dana Brown, our Astros opening day countdown question of the day? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line, 9780. I asked you guys 3 weeks ago if Brown talking too much, for example, him talking about Gilbert coming up, says bad things about all the guys in front of him. All Dana Brown did was challenge Drew Gilbert to play well. Yep. And if he plays well, then the Astros are going to be an organization that will have you on the fast track to the big leagues. If Chaz McCormick and Jake Meyers are all of a sudden shaking in their boots because Dana Brown is asking a prospect to play well, they can kick rocks and go play somewhere else. Like, if somebody's challenging a prospect in center field and the current center fielders are, like, offended by that, then that player's soft, and I really don't have any faith in that player being any good.
I totally agree with you. Look, I do like the fact that you would never have seen James Click do something like that, and I think that, again, because he has the reputation with what he did in Atlanta and who he developed and who he took care of and how he, you know, nurtured and grew talent in the Braves system and then signed them, I think it's great motivation for players. And I think that, you know, just like, you know, deciding that certain pitchers need to be stretched out to possibly be starters or other pitchers that he can get, light a fire under their ass and say, hey, look, you know, if he... You know, memo to him right now, but if he's ready for this, there's going to be a chance and a possible opportunity for him in the next year to year and a half to do this or do that. I mean, if I'm a player, I want that because so many times there's so many guys that are tight-lipped and close to the vest and James Click-esque. They're not going to tell you a whole lot. They're not going to give you an understanding where you stand in the organization, and it's going to create frustration. Instead, if you create motivation and you get guys that go, I like that. Like, this dude knows who I am. And he sees something in me that says if I do more or I work hard, I might have a shot sooner rather than later. That's going to light a fire. That's going to push some buttons. That's going to get me to do what I need to do. I like that approach.
Yeah, and if a dude's becoming, like, nervous because there's an up-and-coming prospect, then I just don't want that player on my team. And I don't care about feelings. We know about this. All I care about is what's best for the team. I don't care about what's best for any individual. 713-780-3776. Where are you standing on this, Joe George? Our Astros opening day countdown question. How do you feel about the early returns of Dana Brown?
I think overall they're pretty positive, but I do think that he's quickly going to lose the fan base. Their trust.
Why?
I just think he's oversharing. Mm-hmm. And like the Kyle Tucker, it was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, you know, he's confident that Kyle Tucker is going to get signed long term. Now you've set expectations for the fan base and you're having to publicly walk that back and say you're less confident. Yesterday he said that today we would know if there was a chance Fromber and Kyle Tucker are signed before the end of spring training. I think you're now setting the bar for yourself too high. Like, I'm on Fromber alert. I've got the breaking news sounder ready to go that immediately in the next 2.5 hours, like, Fromber Valdez might sign a long-term contract with the Astros. I think he's just – so, like, I think it's great. I like that he's sharing so much. I just think that if he fails to sign these guys, he's going to lose the fan base because then no one's ever going to believe him again. Every time he goes out and says, I think we're close to signing Jeremy Pena, or we're trying to lock up Jeremy Pena, everyone's going to go, well, I don't believe you because you said that about Tucker, you said about Bregman, you said about Altuve, and if you don't do it, then he's like hurting his own stock.
Yeah, it's like the boy who cries wolf. Like, you say it so many times and you don't get it done, you don't execute it, then people are going to stop believing it. And I understand that. I just don't feel like that's really anything tangible to the good or bad or the positive or negative detriment of the organization going forward. Quite frankly, the fans' opinions aren't going to matter. Like, they didn't like when Carlos Correa left. Jeremy Pena was outstanding in his rookie year. Didn't like when Gerrit Cole left. The Astros have won a World Series since. So the fan base approval rating, quite frankly, does not matter. It shouldn't matter.
That's fair.
I don't care about it. It's not tangible. Now, I agree that it potentially could happen if all of these dudes eventually leave via free agency and Brown is sitting there talking too much. We haven't seen a whole lot of Dana Brown. Like, so everything that we're basing our judgment on is basically trying to get a read on him, trying to get a tell on him, listening to him talk and trying to figure out what he's going to be like as a general manager. The only big thing that he's done really to date, and not to say he should be doing a lot of things, he's only a few months on the job, was the Christian Javier extension. 5 years, $64 million. I look at that extension. You look at the AAV of what Christian Javier is going to cost you, less than $13 million, mm-hmm. who we all think is going to be one of the best pitchers in the American League. That was a steal. That was a great signing by Dana Brown, and he becomes a free agent after the age of 30. Dana Brown, maybe he was oversharing, but Chandler Rome putting these quotes together from Dana Brown, I'm assuming from West Palm Beach, Florida, he made it known yesterday that he's not willing to do long-term deals, like huge deals, or deals that take a player to their mid-30s. Here was Dana Brown, some quotes from Chandler Rome in today's Houston Chronicle. I think Jim is willing to go further. I just don't know that I have the comfort of going as long as, say, maybe I'll have to get Tucker done. I just don't like big deals. If they're open for something a little more than five, maybe I would be open to do that. I'm sure Jim would be too. I think Jim is very open. But doing 10-year deals, I don't know if we'll ever get to that point. That's a lot of years, man. I'm not comfortable doing 10. That aligns with my philosophy as well. He also said, I don't mind doing 10 if you get a guy to the big leagues in the early 20s. Kind of like Jeremy Pena. Really feel like he's a big piece of the franchise, face of the franchise, get him done for 10, and he finishes out at 32, 33. I'm okay with that. These deals that go beyond 33 for me, I'm uncomfortable. The analytics on that is not good. I understand that my philosophy on signing players in their mid-30s is a little bit more on the minority side. I know that that's not the overwhelming popular opinion. I don't believe you should sign players to big deals into their mid-30s. I love what I'm hearing from Dana Brown, quite frankly. I'm falling in love with the guy.
Okay, look, I agree with everything you said. And I think that the one thing that frustrates me, I like what you said, and I like what Dana Brown said more about the fact, and it definitely, I'm sure Jim Crane likes it too, because that definitely aligns with his philosophy as well. But I wish when they get so analytical that they don't necessarily owe it to the media to tell you why he said what he said. But in negotiations, you can even bring it up and say, look, from past history, statistically and otherwise, these deals never give you the return on the investment in the last, you know, here's the statistics and the return on investment in the last year of the deal, the last 3 years of the deal, the last 5 years of the deal. Because more times than not, the percentages line up to where you can say and you can break it down and back it up with numbers to say, hey, look, we love certain player. We love player X. And he's been a part of our past. We want him a part of our future. But we're not going to do something that makes him such a part of our future that it keeps us from going forward as an organization. And that's where I think that's where Crane and Dana Brown line up. And I think that's where the best teams in baseball are going to have to line up from this day going forward in terms of the new era of Major League Baseball and management. Because we've seen Pujols and we've seen... You know, matter of fact, it's going to be real interesting now to get this new generation of these monster contracts and see how many of them on the back end are going to be productive. Because
baseball's wisened up, though, as like an industry where they're doing it when players are young in their early to mid-20s as mm-hmm. opposed to like when dudes enter that first year of free agency and doing it when they're 29, 30 years old.
They are.
So that's one thing that the industry's wisened up on.
And we know Miguel Cabrera and we know that Pujols are two of the big glaring ones that, you know, stick out in everybody's mind as ones that just completely backfired. But I think even to your point, Jeremy, when you start factoring in injury as well as production, mm-hmm. it's still going to be real interesting to monitor because I think that the back end of those deals are going to be very, very harmful to a lot of franchises, especially if, you know, God forbid, guys endure injuries. And either they have to walk away from the game and retire or they're not the same player. I mean, look, you know, J-Rod's a hell of a player and they wrapped him up and that was really smart. But guess what? He's already now, right after he signed the contract, having back issues. If you deal with this 4 or 5 years down the road and those become nagging, ailing back injury issues, the return on investment's going way down and the deal's not going to look quite as advantageous in the favor of the Mariners.
But it's safer when you do when a player's 23 as opposed to 29.
Sure.
Their peak, their prime, you know, it's extended a little bit. Or you're getting the heyday of his heyday.
A decade deal at 29 is asinine right now.
Whereas 23, it makes sense.
Sure,
now you're becoming a free agent at 33. Like, again, we haven't seen a whole lot of Dana Brown. Is he a little bit loose-lipped? Yeah, I think it's fair to say he's loose-lipped. Has it been detrimental? I don't think that that's provable right now, quite frankly. The three things that I do like so far from Dana Brown, the Christian Javier deal is a steal. I love that contract extension. It's not as quite as good as Jordan, although if Jordan can't get on the field. But the Christian Javier deal is really good. I agree with Dana Brown that I don't want 10-year deals, and I agree with Dana Brown that I don't want to have these huge contracts for players in their mid-30s. I like what I've seen early. The early returns for me are good. What are they for you? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Probably too early to discuss the early returns of Bobby Slowick, the new offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans, but I believe he said something yesterday that dismisses a certain rookie quarterback in this year's draft. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Bobby Slowick tipped his hand. We'll get into that in 2 minutes. I want to read this text to you, though. I want to ask your thoughts on this.
Yes, I'm here.
Who is more important long-term, Tucker or Bregman, if you can only sign one to a big contract?
Ooh.
Let's say it. I mean, the contract part of it's what makes it interesting. Let's just say, like, average market value.
I go to the whiteboard and I say the pros and the cons and the positives and the negatives and start weighing it out. You know, Bregman, they're both good defenders. Bregman gives you a little something more in terms of the clubhouse swag and leadership and
salsa.
The bombs, both on and off the field, the salsa and the home runs. Tucker's younger, but I think he's gonna be a lot more expensive. I kind of lean Bregman. I really do. I think you can find another Kyle Tucker, and I've never been a huge Kyle Tucker's been good. I give him his props and I give him his credit, but I think it took way too long to get there, and that's what I was critical of early. And now when I look at it, and I'm like you, I don't think he's going to resign here. I think that he is going to look for a dollar figure and a length of contract the Astros are not going to be interested in doing. And I think that he is more replaceable than a Bregman, because Bregman is, whether you like it or not, or you like his antics or not, he is so deeply intertwined with what this team has done and it's continuing to do that I think that I would lean his way.
For me, it's Tucker, and it's really not close. Tucker, like you said, is younger, and right now he's already a better player than Alex Bregman. And if we're assuming that, like, you're signing one of these to a big deal, like one of them is going to be on a big deal no matter what, you have to choose between one or the other. I think Kyle Tucker is just a better baseball player right now than Alex Bregman, and he's a younger baseball player than Alex Bregman. So for me, it would be Tucker. Bobby Slowick, Blankers, I think tipped his hand yesterday, and I think we can cross a certain quarterback, rookie quarterback, first-round rookie quarterback, off the Houston Texans big board completely. Bobby Slowick was meeting with the media. The two coordinators were meeting with the media for the first time yesterday in Houston. And Bobby Slowick talked about the Houston Texans offense, and I think, at least the way that I'm interpreting it, that he is out and the Texans are out on a certain rookie QB. Take a listen.
It's not any one position. It's kind of the whole unit, how it all fits together. You know, we kind of take a top-down view, but how we see everything working together is, we're an offense built on precision. Everybody kind of working together in unison, on time, in rhythm. That's the starting point, but it's not any one given position. We see how it all fits.
You guys tell me if I'm reading too much into this, and 713-780-3776. Blankers, I hear the word precision, and whenever I hear the word precision, that tells me that he kind of wants a quarterback that's a point guard, that's going to get the ball out on time, that's going to put the ball where it needs to be, that's going to throw. Hey, sometimes it's going to be a screen pass. Look at San Francisco with Debo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, Ayuk, the skill that they had around that quarterback position. A lot of times it wasn't the dude that had the biggest arm. It wasn't the dude that could sit back in the pocket and have 5 seconds and pick the defenses apart. It was about the quarterback who had precision and could put the ball where it needed to be on time. When I hear precision, the quarterback that it completely eliminates for the Houston Texans, in my opinion, and if y'all think I'm wrong, let me know in 713-780-3776. I think Anthony Richardson's out for the Houston Texans.
First, the minute I heard precision, I thought exactly the same thing. I thought, well, then he's not your guy. However, if I want to push back on that a little bit, I'd say, then why did they go get Trey Lance? Because Trey Lance seems to be more Anthony Richardson than he does a Bryce Young timing, precision, following the plan, executing the play type guy. That maybe that's just me. But, you know, based on where he came from, how he played in college, what they were looking at with it, what his strengths and attributes were when they went out and they got him, it seems like in San Francisco, when they were all on that staff, they were okay in getting a guy that doesn't seem to fit those guidelines. But if he's saying that now as a member of the Houston Texans, it definitely leads you to believe that Anthony Richardson is not on their list.
But see, I think that's interesting because the reports, there's been reports that Trey Lance was the John Lynch choice. And that people thought, yep. Mike Flores said a million times, the 49ers traded up to number 3 to draft Mac Jones. That's precision.
Yeah, I think that was a smokescreen.
I think it might have been too, but like he fits what they are. Like imagine Mac Jones in their offense last year, not Brock Purdy. They might have been playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's a better version of Brock Purdy, right?
Yeah,
like, he's a more talented Brock Purdy. And Slowik even mentioned Brock Purdy yesterday, talking about how look what we did with Mr. Irrelevant. Trey Lance is a great case study. I didn't really think of Trey Lance in terms of this conversation, but it's a really good case study in relation to Anthony Richardson because his skill set is somewhat more similar to Anthony Richardson than it is like C.J. Stroud, or you said Bryce Young, which is true. Like, he's a bigger quarterback. He's a very athletic quarterback. But Trey Lance was accurate. Now, Trey Lance was accurate at North Dakota State. How much stock are you willing to put into that? I would say not that much, right, to be quite honest with you. But the reason that I think Trey Lance is such an interesting case study to this conversation is it hasn't worked. Like, it hasn't worked in San Francisco. Is a lot of that bad luck because of injury? Yes, absolutely. It's an incomplete when we're grading Trey Lance. But it hasn't worked to date. That trade has been a bad trade. So if we're going to compare Richardson to Lance, I would say it's even more reason that the Texans are out on Anthony Richardson.
Well, and I think you could go both ways with it. I think you could say, hey, and maybe to Joe's point, that makes a lot of sense that it was a Lynch decision and not a Shanahan-type decision with the Shanahan offense and Slowik and those guys. But I think that you could have arguments on both sides because, to my point, look, if it wasn't Lynch involved, then it would be even more something to question because you say, well, if you want precision, you want all those things, then why'd you go out and get a guy that basically has a skill set that says something different? But if the general manager force-fed it on you and said that's who we're taking, then it's a different story because I agree with you. I mean, I look and think Trey Lance, and I think that's exactly why he doesn't fit and that's why Richardson doesn't fit. And then I would ask you, as the resident expert on Will Levis.
I didn't go there.
I did. I mean, do you think that Levis is a fit with him saying that? Can Levis be that guy?
What's the knock on Levis? The knock on Levis was that he completed a quarter of his passes behind the line of scrimmage, right? Yeah, San Francisco throws a lot of those passes. San Francisco ran a West Coast offense. Will Levis did that in college. Will Levis had a better completion percentage this past year than Bryce Young did. So, yeah, I think Will Levis can be precise. I know that he gets, like, you know, they call him the inaccurate. He's kind of sporadic throwing the football. Well, they also point to how accurate he is throwing the football behind the line of scrimmage, which is something San Francisco
does quite a bit. Well,
that's
why I asked you, because I'm not talking about...
I think he's a fit, quite honestly. I think Levis is a perfect fit for this offense, but I also think Bryce Young's a perfect fit for this offense.
Yeah, Bryce Young really is to me, because I think, hearing those words out of his mouth makes me think that's exactly what Bryce Young did at Alabama, and we saw it over and over again. Utilize the weapons you have. Get the ball in the hands of playmakers. And you don't have to do much, and you're going to get all the credit in the world, which we saw, and he won the Heisman Trophy. But he didn't have to do too much. Now, when the game was on the line and he had to do things, he still was fully capable of doing that too. But a majority of the time when he got success, it was because he did what he was supposed to do. He put the ball in the playmakers' hands and let them get chunk plays that did things for Alabama and in a secondary fashion did a whole lot of good for Bryce Young.
If you're looking at it from like, okay, we want a precise quarterback, a point guard back there that's always making the right decisions, quick the ball out on time, I would give Young the lead over Levis. But I would give Levis the lead over Stroud, and I would have Anthony Richardson completely off the board. Like, completely off the board. Because I do not look at Anthony Richardson, who was a 54% completion percentage in college, actually went down from his first year at Florida, where he only played in 7 games, to last year. He dropped like 5 points in completion percentage. There's nothing about Anthony Richardson that's precise. Like, Anthony Richardson is this big brute of a man who's incredibly athletic, jumps very high, which Like, are you looking for a quarterback that runs really fast, that can jump very high? I like quarterbacks that can throw the ball accurately. Bobby Slowick is saying that he wants precision. I don't think a 54% completion percentage is precise. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I frankly don't think that I am. I think that Anthony Richardson's out for the
Houston Texans. Because I think the other thing that I keep preaching is I think he's two years away from being getting an opportunity
to
be.
Well, now you're going Jimmy G.
Well, but I'm still saying that's another reason why Richardson's out, because of everything that you said, but also because I think this team is looking for a guy that sooner, much sooner than later, is going to be a guy that contributes to this team. And so I think that if you're looking at quarterback and you're looking at guys that fit what he said, I think that Richardson, the other thing that factors in is I think he's so raw. I think that no matter what you try to do and how you try and do it, that if he's 2 years away, he's too far away from being the guy that you need for this job for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that it's round peg, square hole. Like, you're trying to force something in there. Kind of like, look, if you want to use Trey Lance as the conversation, was Trey Lance trying to be forced into that San Francisco offense? Perhaps.
Well, and to give Joe credit again on the Lynch part of this, if it is true, is the fact that the reason why you heard as much as you heard behind the scenes as him not being ready in Trey Lance is because of the fact that once he got into a Shanahan offense, once he understood what was expected of the quarterback in a Shanahan structure, it basically was something that was a complete like culture shock to him that he was having a hard time adjusting to, because there's so much pre-snap. There's so much in the play calls. There's so much in a lot of times multiple play calls at the same time. And then based on what you see at the line of scrimmage, you know, altering the play call. I think that was a system overload in a lot of ways. And I think he was really struggling to adapt to what Shanahan expects of his quarterback as opposed to what he was used to. And I think that's where the disconnect could have happened in San Francisco. That's why I think it's still an issue. I think now that Jimmy G is gone, and now that Purdy is still, you know, way months away from playing because the surgery was delayed, I think that they're in a tough spot, because if Lance truly still isn't the guy or they don't feel comfortable, I think with as good as the rest of the roster is, I think that they're going to be looking at some other version of a quarterback than Trey Lance. They're just going to have to eat crow in a little bit and admit he might not be a guy that – he might be a guy that can play in the league. He might be a guy that can play for us.
I think I guess I'm in the minority here on the show. Honestly, I heard C.J. Stroud. Like, I think rhythm, timing, precision.
You heard C.J. Stroud out?
No, in. Like, the guy. Like,
I could see that.
I do, too.
I think C.J. Stroud, honestly, is going to be the quarterback for the Texans at 2, because I think Bryce Young will be gone. And honestly, even if he's not, I think there's a good chance C.J. Stroud's the guy. He's got the body type that, like, Nick Casario would typically go to in New England. Mm-hmm. He's 6'3". He's mobile, but he doesn't rely on the run. And he is extremely precise and accurate. Like, I think C.J. Stroud, to me, is everything you would want in this offense.
I think as much as we scrutinize what happened in that last game of the regular season, I believe more and more, and we always say, could Casario have done more? Could he have deactivated some players and done some things? I think the built-in alibi excuse that Nick Casario doesn't have to take a quarterback he doesn't believe in from a size perspective is something that he took a big sigh of relief for. So the more I see all these things, too, I keep thinking C.J. Stroud's going to be the quarterback of the Texans.
The more I watch C.J. Stroud, the more I see Deshaun Watson. On the
field. Is that good or bad?
Let's be very clear. On the field, I don't know. Like, at number two, is Deshaun – like, is a Deshaun – most people would say it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Most people would say it's a good – I was in the minority thinking that Deshaun Watson was a bit overrated, quite frankly, because he took a lot of negative plays. Now, a lot of the negative plays, C.J. Stroud doesn't. Like, C.J. Stroud doesn't dance in the pocket nearly as much. He doesn't take nearly as many sacks.
He doesn't try to run as much as Deshaun did.
Yeah, I guess that'd be a good thing. I guess it'd be a good thing.
I mean, I think that the other thing, too, is the people that saw – felt all the hype and saw the accolades that were coming to Sean's way, didn't see the win-loss record, and that's weird. Because most kind of average Texans fans are only concerned with how many games did you win. But I think it's with blinders on that a lot of people judge Deshaun Watson, and they go, oh my God, what a talent. Oh my God, what a multifaceted quarterback that could run, could pass, had these numbers, did these things. They didn't look real closely at the games won and the big games won, that I think that they get skewed. And it's weird because it's normally – skewed towards wins and losses as a judgment. And with Deshaun, they don't. They just judge this guy was an all-world talent.
Which first-round quarterback best describes precision that Bobby Slowick and the Houston Texans want with this offense? Who doesn't? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. Also, there's been this rumor going around that Nick Caserio has not mentioned the name Davis Mills. I feel like it's our civic duty to clarify that those rumors are false. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville's a great dude, but he also knows what he's doing. He's the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure, and you've heard us all talking about the NeoGraft procedure. If you don't know what it is, it's a way of getting your hair back where you have thinning or balding spots, and it's simply your natural hair put where you need it most. It's not sprays and creams and foams and all the things that just mask the problem but don't fix it. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. And Doc Linville with the NeoGraft procedure has mastered the ability of taking some of that hair and putting it where you need it most. And primarily that's on the back of your head on top or your hairline where your forehead has become an 8-head. He can take care of all of it. And really, it's a painless procedure. I went through it. The results are seen in about 6 to 9 months. And the fact of the matter is the hair that he moves is going to stay and grow and be with you for the long haul. As a listener to ESPN 97.5, you get an added bonus where the average person off the street is going to pay $150 just to have a consultation with Doc Linville and his staff to find out about the NeoGraft procedure. As listeners to the station, you get it for free. Just go to 975hair.com and book an appointment. It's free. No obligation, no strings attached. And then go to the appointment and ask all your questions. Find out about financing options, how long the procedure takes, when you'll see the full results. And the big thing that got me, 95%+ of all the follicles moved are going to stay and grow and be with you for the long haul. And that's what won me over. See if you're the next in line to get the NeoGraft procedure. Check them out today at 975hair.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
There's been a nasty rumor going around this city.
That Joe George isn't loyal to his buddies on the Killer Bees.
Well, that's not a rumor.
Oh, that's fact.
Every good journalist has two sources to confirm things. That's been confirmed three times over.
That's weird. My sources confirmed that I've got like a bunch of compliments today. So
compliments in the fact that what? That you're loyal to the alphabet starting with?
You said great points. No, don't even mention that because it is a war zone on the Twitch right now that I want nothing to do with.
What, the fact that you start the alphabet with the first letter and can't get to the second one because the second one is the B's and you hate us?
I love the B's.
No, you love the A's.
No, I love the B's.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying.
What up?
Oh, come on.
Pew, pew, pew.
Who's complimented to you today, though? I'm curious.
Joel.
Today?
Oh, you said
I didn't compliment you at all today.
You said great.
I definitely didn't do it on your wardrobe.
Said, great point by Joe. About Mac Jones.
Oh, you're right. I did.
Boom. Victory.
That's for the betterment of the show. They said we don't have to like the people that we work with. Just make sure during the show it doesn't show.
Who said that?
Different people.
I complimented Joe, too, actually.
You know my sources, so you shut your mouth.
I complimented Joe a little bit earlier, too, saying it was a good idea to have the bullpen in local radio programming on Saturday and Sunday.
Yep.
Look at us. Mm-hmm. I think we're all mature.
See, Jeremy, no. Team two players. Of us are because we're able to play the game the right way. The little backstabber over there doesn't know how to. He's more Easterby. He's slimy Easterby.
No,
he's
fair.
Cool to
that's
our faces.
No.
Let's remember, too,
you're
Jeremy, that he wasn't hiding behind the glass yesterday. He was sitting right next
you're
to us. So
far.
He was on his best behavior.
Hold
and
up.
The minute that we left
climb
and hit up. The road, did you notice that everything changed?
I'm not going to let
little Joe
climb.
Easterby decided to start on the radio.
This is not fair. This is slander.
Oh, this is true.
It might be.
In the first segment of the show, I gave Jeremy grief about missing the last hour the day before, and you laughed, Joel.
I didn't say it.
You laughed.
I didn't say it. I'm saying the fact that you are Jack Easterby-esque because to our faces, you were just a little angel yesterday at Wildcat. And the minute we hit the road, you were like, oh, they're gone now. Now I can dip them in the grease and then set them on fire. Okay, go back and listen.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. I got charged for it. I got to take care of that. I think I'm just going to leave it. Yeah, they still charged my card.
For those drinks?
Yeah.
I even talked to her about getting up.
I looked at my credit card bill this morning, so I'm going to let it fly. So now I have one over Jeremy. I bought him a beer.
Okay.
Yep.
That's fine. I'm okay with that. I'd be happy to pay you back. Have a cold beer with Joe George always sounds like a good idea.
No,
although whenever we're drinking,
see?
It's going to be Gentle Ben. I've been hearing a lot of rumors about this, guys, that the Houston Texans are just not saying Davis Mills by name, even though D'Amico Ryan said it, I think, in his introductory press conference. Bobby Slowick said it yesterday, and people are like, oh, look, Bobby and D'Amico are the only two guys that are mentioning Davis Mills by name. Nick Caserio has not been mentioning Davis Mills by name. And remember, Nick Caserio is also kind of quirky on how he calls players. Remember, he used to call Deshaun Watson, like, he called him four, and he called him, like, our quarterback. He kind of didn't really allude to him as by name either, like at times. Well, here was Nick Caserio in Indy at the Combine meeting with Mike Florio and Chris Sims. Major Applewhite was better, but he was talking to them in an interview that was on PFT, right? Here was Nick Caserio talking with Florio and Sims.
Probably have some optionality, Mike. So really, Davis is the only player under contract currently. So boom. Kyle and draft are free agents. So I'd say there's a good chance we're going to have two or three new players at this position. So between free agency and the draft, probably some combination of both. We're probably going to have those players on the team. So each player, each quarterback has their own traits and characteristics that, you know, they do well. So it's really identifying what does a player do well, how does he fit in the system. And really, I think what you don't want to do is put a timetable about, like, when a player has to play whenever he's drafted, whether it's a quarterback or whether it's somebody else. So what we want to try to do is try to build a good infrastructure, try to build a good team, and then just give the players opportunity to be successful when they go out.
Never let the truth get in the way of a good story. I can understand that. I can appreciate that. But there you have it. Our civic duty for the Killer Bees for you, City of Houston. Nick Caserio has mentioned Davis Mills by name this offseason, and he did it last week at the
Combine. That was so overrated, but it was sweeping social media. Everybody was so focused on the fact that, oh, D'Amico won't say his name. Oh, no one's going to say his name. No one wanted to say his name. By the end of the year, you saw enough that you never wanted to say his name again, and you're just the fans of the team. For those guys, we all know who he's talking about because there is only one quarterback under contract, and it didn't take rocket scientists to figure it out. So why is it such a big deal? It's because football matters, and everybody's so involved and so entrenched in everything that happens with this team that suddenly was a big deal? Well, you know what? I mean, Destiny's Child, say his name then. I mean, who cares either way? For God's sake, they're going to have a new quarterback this year, and it ain't going to be the guy's name they won't say. He's going to be either on the backup as the roster.
Well, he did say it, Joel.
What?
Let the truth get...
He said the first name.
He said Davis.
You know what, Jeremy? It's a bigger controversy because now he just said Davis. Why didn't he say Davis Mills? There's something to this. There's something going on.
Now, we're having fun with that, of course. It's our civic duty to let you know that Nick has said his name, like Destiny's Child, like Joe said, which is a nice little nice recall there. That's well done. But he did say something at the end of that soundbite, though. He said that we shouldn't rush to play. And I'm paraphrasing here, but basically said that it shouldn't be about the timeline. It shouldn't be about rushing a player to see when he's going to play, no matter what position and no matter where he's drafted. That last sentence there. Then this was last week. This was before Jimmy Garoppolo rumors. That last sentence that it shouldn't be about the timetable of when any player starts playing at any position. That made me think that Jimmy G is actually on the table, Blankers.
I mean, look. Here's the thing. At this point, with where they are, I don't think anything's off the table. I think that, and it shouldn't be. I think that if you're a smart football operations department, you have every option on the table. You're looking at guys that you know and you're familiar with. You're looking at guys that intrigue you. You're looking at the guys that are the smart bet, and you're looking at guys that are more of a risk, but that might have a bigger return. And you're starting to poke holes at everything to see which make the most plausible sense for you as a franchise, which ones you can start writing off. But I think that because they know Jimmy G so well, they know that there's at least one scenario on the board for them where they either pass completely on a quarterback, or it's a Hendon Hooker, or it's an Anthony Richardson, or it's someone that is a little ways away from being a starter in this league and being fully ready to take the reins, but might be a guy that in the future could make a whole lot of sense and pay massive dividends, so much so they're willing to go short-term with a veteran. So I think that's definitely on the table, and I think that they're smart by looking at all the options, but I'm hopeful that by the time we get closer to the draft, that they're going to focus more on guys that they can go get that can play right away, that aren't going to be a veteran guy that's trying to get another big contract and another starting job for the long term, because I don't think it's the right fit for the Texans. And I think for Jimmy G, it's not the right fit except for like a year or so till he can find a different situation that's better for him.
I've told you I'd be stunned and I would be disappointed if Jimmy Garoppolo is on the Houston Texans in 2023. That first part of what I just said is starting to fade a little bit. I'm starting to think I'd be more surprised than stunned. I'm starting to see it becoming a possibility. That said, that disappointing part of me, that's never going to go away. If Jimmy Garoppolo is on this team and he's taken up 50 to 75% of your cap space this offseason, the Texans got it wrong. There's no reason Jimmy Garoppolo should be on this football team next year.
No, we went over this before, and everything stands true again today and probably more so, but you're right. I think that the one thing that is going to cloud this up is the fact that all the guys with Niner ties really feel comfortable with Jimmy G. But I think that wrong situation, just like we talked about with Lamar, wrong situation for player and for team, because Jimmy G's coming in to try and prove that he belongs as a starter in this league, whether it's here or somewhere else. Jimmy G's also going to expect that in order to do what he needs to do to impress people, he's going to need people around him. But because his contract coming in is going to be higher than some of the other guys you could bring in if you were looking for a bridge QB, it's going to limit you, and I think that philosophically you're going to be on two different pages. He's going to want to try and win now, where you are going to try and stay on the course.
Every quarterback's going to try to win, though.
Yeah, but
every
him more so than
plays.
Most.
Now,
you're
he
right.
He might have a better chance to win, but every quarterback's going to try to win.
Him more so for selfish reasons, though, because he's looking to try and prove that he belongs as a starter in this league for multiple years, whereas most quarterbacks are trying to win because they're trying to push their team forward and they're going to be there for multiple years.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Will House did a fun practice yesterday, and I was curious your thoughts on this. Your dream quarterback room for 2023, what does it look like? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.